Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Election College, episode number 259, Thomas Hendricks. Jason, I was thinking earlier tonight, we should do a podcast about the most boring vice president in history. And there I was racking my brain, and here it comes, Thomas Hendricks.
Aww.
I don't know if that's really true. I just... You read about some people and you think, what an amazing life they had. And then you read about other people and you're like, meh, kind of, you know, probably still a great life, but just nothing fancy happens.
Well, we're talking about him like 100 and something years after he died.
I suppose that's true.
I mean, if somebody's talking about me 100 and something years after I die, that's pretty impressive.
I have to agree with you. Well, before we talk about him dying, we should probably talk about him living. He was born
Oh, Ben, that was beautiful.
He was born in September of 1819 in Ohio, near Zanesville, which we know where Zanesville is, Jason. At least you and I do. I don't know about the whole rest of the audience.
That's like halfway between where you and I live.
I know. We should go to his house sometime.
Yeah.
It's probably not there. And he was the second of 8 children who from John and Jane, who were originally from Pennsylvania. And in 1820, about a year after, a little less than a year after Hendricks is born, they move to Jefferson County, Indiana. And Thomas's uncle, William Hendricks, is a successful politician who serves as a U.S. representative, a U.S. senator, and the third governor of Indiana. And remember all those things, folks.
Hey, Ben.
Uh-huh.
Madison?
Yeah.
Indiana?
Yeah.
We need to take you there sometime. It's a really cool town.
Nice.
It's on the river.
What's cool about it?
It's just preserved in time. So it's one of those cities that is... It's not necessarily in the Louisville metropolitan area. It's not necessarily in the Cincinnati metropolitan area. So it has its own identity. And it's a really cool town. It has the main street that's thriving and has all of the businesses that you could ever want. And it's just really cool.
Nice. We'll have to take a road trip sometime.
Definitely. It's one of the first places that we went to, actually, when we told our family that we were pregnant.
Oh,
well,
cool.
That my wife was pregnant. We got in the car, went to Madison, enjoyed a day. There's a state park there called Clifty Falls, which sounds really, it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's really cool.
Yeah.
And then shortly after we had the baby, we went down there and enjoyed a day. Great place to get ice cream and best Reuben I've ever had. Madison,
oh,
Indiana.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the impressive. Best.
Now I have to go. I have to go just for the Reuben.
Yeah. But it's in a really pretty setting.
Cool.
Sorry.
It's all right. I thought that's good color commentary.
If you're like going to say that a guy's life is boring, then I've got to add some color, right?
Well, hey, if he was living there and now it's exciting, maybe it's because of him.
There's probably some Hendricks legacy there.
It's entirely possible. So anyway, they settled down on a farm near his uncle's house, and in 1822 his father is a successful farmer. He operates a general store. He gets involved in politics. And, he gets appointed as the deputy surveyor of public lands by President Andrew Jackson. So, dad is kind of all of a sudden a politician.
Yeah, and, you know, Hendricks, he's doing his thing. He goes to some public schools, and he graduates from Hanover College there in Hanover, Indiana, in 1841. Little plug for Hanover. Really cool place right along the river. And actually, like, one of their most famous alumni is Woody Harrelson.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So after he graduates from Hanover, he reads law there in Shelbyville, Indiana. And a couple of years later, he goes off to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, and does a law course. And Ben, just a plug for Chambersburg. Oh, my goodness. They have a lot of new stuff off that exit, off I-81. If you've ever wanted to go, some good pizza,
yeah,
actually off that exit. This is like, I'm feeling this affinity for Thomas Hendricks. Here you're saying his life is boring, but I'm finding my path is crossing his geographically.
Well, maybe that says something about your life.
Oh. Well, after
probably not.
After he spends some time there in Chambersburg and probably has some pizza, he goes back to Indiana. No, he probably doesn't have pizza there. He goes back and was admitted to the bar in 1843 and establishes a practice in Shelbyville.
In 1845, he marries Eliza Carroll Morgan, who's from North Bend, Ohio, and after they'd been dating for about 2 years. They met whenever Eliza was visiting her sister, and that's kind of how it went. The couple's only child was named Morgan and passed away at the age of 3 after being born in 1848. So Thomas and Eliza moved to Indianapolis in 1860 and lived there for quite some time. You can still see one of the houses that they lived in if you go to South Jersey Street in Indianapolis.
Yeah. Hey Ben.
Yeah.
North Bend, Ohio. You know it's there.
I do.
It's pretty crazy because you think about it, Harrison, you know, William Henry Harrison's buried there, but Benjamin Harrison, you know, he was brought up there and he lived in Indianapolis too.
It's a small world, really.
It is a small world.
So Hendricks stays pretty active in the legal community, and he stays pretty active in politics for most of his life. But in 1848 is when he starts it all. And he serves a 1-year term in the House of Representatives for Indiana. And he's also one of the 2 delegates to the 1850-1851 Indiana Constitutional Convention, which, you know, is kind of a big deal.
In 1851, he is elected to the U.S. House of Representatives. And get this, Ben, here he is. He's from Indiana, but of course he's a Democrat. He's supporting the whole deal of popular sovereignty, and you know what that means. That's like any territory gets to decide if they want to be a slave territory or not. So he votes in favor of the Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854 that expands slavery into the Western territories. And the people in Indiana are saying to themselves, oh my goodness, why did we vote this guy in? He doesn't share our values, and he loses his reelection bid in 1854.
In 1855, President Franklin Pierce is like, hey, Hendricks, would you like to be the commissioner of the General Land Office in Washington, D.C.? And he's like, yeah, sure, I'll go for that. And so his job is to supervise 180 clerks and, well, a large backlog of work, about 4 years of backlog. And of course, you know, this is the time when lots of expansion is happening in the United States. And that means that there's lots and lots of land sales and deeds and things like that to record and coming through that office. So during the time he was employed there, they issue over 400,000 land patents. They settle over 20,000 disputed land cases, and he makes like a billion decisions, probably more like thousands, but lots of decisions about the disputed land claims and things like that. And really only got reversed, only a few got reversed in court. So, you know, he did a pretty fair and decent job.
Yeah, with Pierce leaving office, Buchanan comes in. Hendricks is like, hey, Mr. Buchanan, I don't really care for you very much. So what do? After you decide that you can't get along with President James Buchanan, you go back to Indiana and you run for governor a lot of times. He runs a couple of times, loses, and then gets appointed as the senator, or elected as a senator. It's kind of an appointment election thing, right? Back then.
Yeah.
He represents Indiana in the U.S. Senate from 1863 to 1869. And here he is. He's a Democrat in the U.S. Senate during the Civil War. Well, that wasn't a very popular thing to be, but he was one of those guys who voted against the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments. But, you know, there he was.
There, that's right. There he was. So like Jason mentioned, he runs for governor a few different times. He loses a couple different times until 1872 rolls around. On his third campaign, he wins by a very incredibly narrow margin, just about 1,200 votes or a little less than that. He continues to have an active law practice and does so until he is elected to represent Indiana in the U.S. Senate in 1863. And, of course, it goes through lots of different changes, his names and stuff like that. But when he does take that office, he's no longer part of that firm. He represents Indiana during the final years of the American Civil War and part of the Reconstruction era as well. And, like Jason said, that's not a terribly popular place to be a senator from during that time. During that time, he is a leader of the Democratic minority, and also a member of the opposition, and pretty much very often overruled and doesn't get to speak his piece very often, I guess you could say.
Very lonely place. Yeah. Hey, do you want to talk a little bit about his governorship? Because it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
He finally gets to the governor's seat or chair. What is that called? Governor's... something.
I was thinking like the physical chair.
Yeah, sure. That works. He's sitting there. He's governor now in 1872. Well, actually 1873. He was elected in 1872. And the biggest thing that he does, in my opinion, is he's largely responsible for the construction of, or beginning the plans for construction of, a new state house there in Indianapolis. And if you look at the cornerstone, when it was laid, he delivered the keynote speech. And there's a big old statue of him. So if you're from Indianapolis, he's kind of important to you. I'm not from Indianapolis, so.
What are you trying to say, Jason?
I'm just saying, I'm learning a lot about a guy who lived all around me.
Yeah, that's true. So Hendricks runs for vice president in 1876, and then again in 1884. He doesn't win in 1876. He's the Democratic candidate, along with Samuel Tilden running for the presidency. He doesn't actually end up going to the Democratic convention, but basically the party's like, yeah, we're pretty much going to try to carry the South along with the New York and Indiana states, so we're going to nominate him regardless. So of course this is the election where they get the majority of the popular votes, but they do lose the election by one vote in the Electoral College. We've talked about that, and we would encourage you to go back and listen to those episodes again. In 1884, though, on the other hand, he does pull through and win along with Grover Cleveland's, and becomes vice president in 1885. He'd been kind of sickly for a few years, and he serves as vice president from his inauguration until his death 8 months later in November of 1885. And basically Grover Cleveland doesn't pull somebody else in for the vice presidency for the rest of his term.
Yeah. Gee whiz. Man, how many vice presidents in the 1800s died?
Oh yeah, there were quite a few.
Good night.
And the great, I mean, you know, he's he's going home to Indianapolis for a little trip for probably for like Thanksgiving or something for the break. And he says, hey, I'm not feeling real great. And then he goes to bed and passes away. That was it.
Yeah. Man, all of our episodes end in them dying.
Well, that's true. We should really, if you could figure out a way, not the part one episodes. If we do two episodes on a person, that's only one episode ends with them dying.
Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Hey, something cool about Thomas Hendricks. He is the only vice president who didn't serve as president whose portrait appeared on paper currency. An engraved portrait of Hendricks appears on the $10 silver certificate from 1886. Speaking of death, the currency's note is, it's called the Tombstone Silver Certificate because the border around his picture is tombstone shaped.
Yeah.
Good night.
Crazy stuff.
I keep on saying good night.
Good night. Good night. Good night to all of you as you, you know, you're just listening to the podcast and you're like, what should I do now? Oh, I know. How about I leave Election College a review on iTunes? That'd be great.
Yeah. And while you're there on the internet doing your thing, do people still play Candy Crush? You might be doing that.
I think so somehow, but I don't know about
it.
Man,
what happened to Farmville?
I think it's probably still around too. There's still people just funneling money into it. I
have never played Farmville or Candy Crush. Can you believe that?
Don't bother.
Okay. But while you're doing that, you can pause the game. I think you can probably pause the game.
Maybe.
Go over and interact with us there on Facebook, if that's what you do. If you're on Twitter, you can interact with us there too. And if you're on Instagram, you can interact with us there too. We're at Election College on all three of those social media sites.
You can even just shout into the void and we might hear you.
Probably. Yeah. But don't invite us to play Candy Crush, please.
No, please don't do that. Hey, everybody, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.